Welcome to Energy Medicine Radio with Dr. Wu Di, a celebration of unique healing modalities for your mind, body, and soul, opening the pathway to wellness, enlightenment, and creative living. Our mission is to share consciousness-shifting information with humanity and help people improve and transform their overall quality of health, wealth, and happiness. Thank you for joining us.
Good evening. This is Dr. Wu Di for Energy Medicine Radio. And here I'm still in my office. Whoa, had a late patient tonight, but I'm still here and working. And now I'm ready to bring on a special guest. Energy Medicine Radio is brought to you by RechargingQigong.com. Recharging Qigong is my website with a series of programs on it and things that will enhance your health, well-being, meditation, open up. When we're talking about health, we're always talking about our health mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Health isn't just your physical being. It's every part of your, every part of you. Your sexual energy is part of your health. Tonight, I invited a very special guest to come on. One of my friends, patients, Dr. Das, he practices meditation and has been practicing for a while. And he introduced me not too long ago to a Swami Vishnu, who has been trained in India and has lived there a good portion of his life. Swami Vishnu, his family brought him up. He was born and raised in very spiritual practices that most of us in the West don't have. His mother's from Spain and his father's from New York, and they lived in the United Kingdom for a while. And then they moved to a monastery or ashram. You know, ashram is a monastery. More on the Hindu traditions, and he attended school there at the tender age of only 11, and he studied the ancient philosophies, spiritual bhakti yoga, the yoga of love and service, as well as some ancient texts. He speaks many languages, and I'd like to introduce Swami Vishnu. Are you there?
Hello, yes, I'm here.
Welcome to the show. This is the Energy Medicine Show, and I'm so glad you could join us. I know I talked to you before you went to India, and I'm so glad that you're back in the United States and sharing your wealth of knowledge with so many people.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm kind of excited because this is interesting to intertwine the energy medicine with the spirituality and see how they're connected. So I think it's going to be fun.
Well, when we're talking about energy medicine, you know, I work with people all the time. I do acupuncture and homeopathic medicine and medical qigong. And many of these practices, they are energetic. But the basis of my practice is my spiritual practice. When you open up to, you know, to healing someone, of course, You can't negate the spirit. I think the spirit is what drives everything. That's where we came from. That's where we're going to. And while we're having this stopping over here, there's places to and ways to make one open more spiritually. And the reason I invited you on the show is I know you teach meditation all over the world, and now you're in South Florida and sharing some of these techniques with the Floridians. How are people opening up to this form of healing meditation? And, you know, tell us a little bit about your practices here, please.
Okay, so the question is, how are people opening it up and to, how do you say, connecting with these, with this ancient, how do you say, spiritual practices? And it's kind of interesting because the approach that I take is not like your standard approach. Like a lot of times when people think about meditation, it's like either going up in some mountain or sitting in a yoga class and going, Om, or like trying to calm your mind, just to try to kick everything outside of your mind and think of nothing so that you can merge and become nothing and stuff like that. And that's good. It's got its place. It's definitely part of the whole spectrum of the ancient Vedic knowledge. But that's not really the approach that I have. That's not really the main point, right? The main thing that I teach is how life is a holistic life, right? How, like you were saying in the beginning, I really like that, how our body, our mind, our spirit, the spiritual side of things, as well as our meditation, as well as our physical health, is all completely intertwined. So a lot of people kind of get that nowadays. A lot of people know that, okay, if I meditate, it's good for the mind, it's good for the brain, good for brain waves and stuff like that. A lot of people know that if I do practice and if I calm my mind, then somehow it's going to help in life. But I think what's kind of missing in the West now is people knowing why does that happen. How does it actually happen practically? Why does it work like that? And with a detailed understanding of the way that things work, then you kind of have access to a greater knowledge and a greater power in your meditation practice and in being able to be effective in life in different ways. So I've been teaching that here for some time. It's your question of how do people respond to it, right? And people really like it. People are kind of like, they like it. Yeah, it's working. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Right. So you're filling in some of the, you know, in the West, you know, the minds are very inquisitive. I know that, you know, when I studied some of the, you know, the traditions, you know, more of the Eastern traditions, the teacher gives it to you, you thank them very much, and you're happy to have the teaching. But in the West, everybody wants to know, why should I do this? Why do I put my fingers together? Why should do I, you know, tell me why? And it seems like you are giving people, you're answering those questions for people. Am I correct?
Exactly. Yeah. Like a lot of times spiritual practices are very much trapped in cultures. Like I lived in India for a long time and there's a lot of the cultures. So there's a lot of like rituals and you do this and you do that. And there's like all these rules about how everything is supposed to happen. And us Westerners are kind of like, well, what's the deal? Why do I need to do that? And that's exactly what I teach. That's exactly what I teach. And the beauty, the thing that excites me, the reason what keeps me going with this, is that the Eastern philosophy, which is what I teach, that is actually, all the whys are there. It's not just ritual, and there's a very scientific reason behind almost everything, you know? So it's exciting.
What is the scientific reason behind meditation? Is there such a thing?
Yes.
Could you explain a little bit to the listening audience?
Sorry, what was that?
I asked you if you'd explain a little bit about is because although I've done many meditations for many years, in some of it I understand why, and others they just say, do this meditation. This will open up the, you know, whatever, this will open up
something.
The chakras. Or yeah, but they don't give you actually a scientific explanation. Could you enlighten us a little bit about why one would like focus on their third eye point, or why do I want my chakras open?
Okay, so when we say meditation, that's like a very big generalization. There's a lot of different types of meditation, and there's a lot of different purposes for different meditations. But over here, I guess we're going to kind of encapsulate things, and if we understand the general principle of how stuff works, then stuff will make sense. And, okay, like, here's one thing. Like, there's one ancient book, the Bhagavad Gita, and it's a very famous book, probably one of the greatest Hindu texts and one of the most famous, how do you say, text in the world. And basically, the person there, Arjuna, he has one dilemma. And he's thinking, he was there at a battlefield. I'm not going to explain the whole book here because that's a whole separate thing. But he's sitting there on the battlefield and he's like, okay, I'm supposed to fight this war, but why should I fight this war? Should I or should I not? And it seems like a simple question that maybe in like 5 or 10 minutes you can answer. But the whole Bhagavad Gita is a conversation just pretty much for that question. And one thing that I find interesting is that in order to understand any one part of reality, you cannot isolate that part of reality from the rest of existence. So you kind of have to get the whole spectrum of everything if you're going to understand one little part. Like, you can't just study the hand by itself. The hand is connected to the arm, is connected to the body, is connected to the person, is connected to the emotion. So the Vedic approach, the Vedas are the ancient scriptures, the ancient texts of India, which is the basis of the stuff that I teach, right? About 5,000 years old, yoga comes from it. There's many medical sciences, like Ayurveda comes from the Vedas, and many different nice things. So the Vedic science kind of explains the whole spectrum of things, so then a particular thing makes sense. So to understand meditation, okay, why does this inducing a state of consciousness or focusing my mind, what's the purpose of it? How does that actually change anything or do anything in my life? Let's kind of just give a little bit of an overview of all of existence. I know that's a little funny, right? But that's kind of the way it is, you know?
Could you give us an overview of all of? I don't even know if I can say that. I don't know if you can get that many words, all the existence, in a little brief summary.
Well, let's try. I think I can maybe do some justice in 5 or 10 minutes, right? But
okay,
if you actually want to know more, this specific approach that I'm teaching, I wrote a whole course. It's called Elemental Reality. And I'm going to kind of just like explain a little bit about, not about the course, but the teachings in the course right now. But
right,
if you send
and then
me
maybe
an email,
you'll tell us how we can,
then I can
we
give
can...
you that course for 30 days. What?
Okay.
Did you say?
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
I said, and if you tell our audience how possibly they could get in touch with you or get this course too, that's very interesting to people.
So it's an online course.
But tell us a little bit about it, and then tell us.
Then I'll tell you about the course and how you can get more if you like it and if it's interesting.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Okay.
That would be helpful.
So basically, and I know you're familiar with this because you're an acupuncturist, right, and you deal with these things very often, but all of existence is composed of specific things, specific elements. And these elements are described in the Vedic scriptures, and also, as you're probably familiar with because I know you're an acupuncturist, there's the 5-element acupuncture. I'm going to explain it from the Vedic concept, which is slightly different than the Chinese, but it's actually pretty much a similar or same science, right? So it says that basically everything that you see, you touch, interact with is made up of 8 things. It's one or a combination of these 8 things. The first thing is earth. The second is water. After that is fire. Then there's air. And ether. I know in Chinese they change ether for wood, and I think, is it air for metal? I'm not exactly sure. I think it's
correct.
Air for metal.
Yeah, that's correct.
And the Vedic concept is earth, water, fire, air, ether, or space, or sound vibration. And these are physical elements that machines can detect. You can touch these things, you know. And then there's 3 more elements which are described in the Bhagavad Gita, which is mind, intelligence, and false ego or identity. And if you look at this spectrum of elements, when you start with earth is the most physical element. It's like undebatable. You can touch it, you can bang it. It makes, you know, earth is there, all right? More subtle than earth is water. Water is more subtle. It's fluid, but it's still quite physical. More subtle than water is fire, but it's still definitely there. Then more subtle than fire is air. Right, and in air also, if someone's listening to this radio show, you're probably familiar with chi or prana or ki or the energy. Sometimes people talk about the energy. That's existing very much in the air element, and it's described, the Vedic knowledge goes into much detail with everything, so there's 5 main different types of air, prana, panchana, and so on, but we don't need to get into that kind of detail right now. So there's prana, air, right, or that energy. Then after that is ether, and that's even more subtle, that space which everything is in. And what exists in the ether element or in the ether realm is sound, it's vibration. It's some people, they get into the scientific side of things, and they look and they see everything is actually just vibration, it's just things moving, it's just sound, and sound's very, very powerful. You know, there's some weapons made out of sound. And that then more subtle than sound, because each one's becoming more subtle than the one before. So now we enter into the subtle elements, which is the mind. That's where there's our emotions, that's where there's our feelings, and that's the mind, right? Then more subtle than the mind is intelligence. That's understanding, that information, that data. That's, I would even kind of say, like DNA, like the very script or information in existence, knowledge. Then more subtle than that is ego or identity, is identification. So in the Vedic knowledge, it explains that everything that we experience in this world is a combination or one of these eight elements. And those elements are divided into the physical and into the subtle. So there's subtle elements like mind, intelligence, and false ego, and there's physical elements, earth, water, fire. So basically, there's stuff that you can see and touch, and there's stuff that you can't see and touch in existence. So when people are trying to understand, okay, what is existence, what is the world, who am I, and all of these things, which the great philosophers have been studying since before history, you know, all the time. It's very easy for people to have an understanding of the physical elements because I keep on saying, they're very perceivable. But to become attuned with the subtle elements, even though the subtle elements are there, it requires a little bit more sensitivity. It requires being a little bit more refined. Like, for example, with prana, with chi, you know, with this life energy, I know you, because I've had one of your treatments, Dr. Woody, very good. You can perceive, you can touch, you can experience that. Isn't that true? Don't you deal with it like every day?
That's what I do all the time.
It's what you do all the time. The energy's there.
Well, the energy is always there. It's just how to balance it and rebalance it to keep a person healthy.
And you fix all kinds of diseases all the time with that, right?
Well, I open up the energy and the disease seems to dissipate.
Yeah, I experienced it. You gave me a treatment I felt really good after.
Right. Well, you'll come in again. I'd love to treat you again.
Well, thank you. Yay. So a lot of people can't experience and see the energies in the way that you do. They can't perceive that because they haven't practiced. They haven't become attuned to that subtle force. It's there. You can see it in them, but they can't see it in them. Is that correct?
Correct.
Correct. So the reason why I'm saying that is that the more subtle something is, the more fine it is, and it's harder to perceive. But now the interesting thing is that the subtle is actually more powerful than the physical. Or if we look at the process of creation, which we're not going to get into right now, but in the course it's all described, that is not only the subtle is more powerful than the physical, but the subtle creates the physical. Manifestation starts in the subtle and comes from subtle to gross. Like Napoleon Hill of Think and Grow Rich, he was like, thoughts are things, Stephen Covey would say that there's two processes of creation. First, it's created in the mind, or it's created in the subtle realm, and then it manifests physically. So this happens in so many different, realms of existence. Anything, like if there's a building, how did that building exist? First, someone had the desire, then there was the want to do it, then a lot of intelligence was put into designing the building, into how to manage the project, and how to source the money, and to do everything. And then the physical building was able to manifest because first it existed in the mind, or existed as little squiggles on the piece of paper, which is writing, which communicated information, which exists in the subtle realm, that thus was able to create the physical. This is a little complicated, but basically what I'm trying to communicate right here simply in a radio show is that there's subtle stuff and there's physical stuff in reality, and they work together. And there's an interrelationship between the subtle and the physical. And the subtle is more powerful, and the subtle is, creates the physical. So when we want to attain any specific thing in this world, when we want a specific benefit, or if we want to get something, a very powerful way, or even arguably the more powerful way of approaching that situation, is to approach it from the subtle realm. Is to approach it in the realm of mind, intelligence, and false ego. If you put intelligence in something, or if you change your identity about yourself, then the physical equivalent or the physical manifestation can come easier. So this has applications in everything. And in the course, we get into it in a lot of detail about how you can use it in economics or how you can use it in martial arts or in health or in all the spiritual advancement and that. But the question was about meditation. So what is happening in meditation? What's actually going on? The question is, okay, which element is that targeting? And a lot of times, the meditation, well, it's really, there's different types of meditation, but let's just say there's meditation, it's about the mind, right? If we hear the Sanskrit term mantra, many people have heard of what mantras are, right? What does that mean? The actual literal translation of the word is man means the mind, and triyate means to channel. So mantras are designed to channel the energy of the mind. So basically, if the mind is scattered around here and there, which happens all the time, right? You're familiar with that. Try to sit down to meditate for a few minutes, your mind just runs around the universe and back. That's the nature of the mind. Then if things are out of balance in the subtle realm, then they also become out of balance into the physical realm. And this works in all fields of life. So what meditation does is it channels the energy of the mind and the emotions and the things in the subtle realm to bring them in harmony and balance, and thus, as a natural side effect, physical stuff gets better, right? As you were saying, like you do with your treatment in acupuncture.
Right.
And you align the energy, then the physical stuff automatically falls suit. So one of the reasons why we do meditation is to kind of bring the subtle stuff in balance, so the physical stuff comes into balance and harmony, and then we can be more effective and we can, how do you say, get specific benefits.
Wow, that is great. That's great, because when we think of the power of manifestation, of course, like you said, if you want to build a building, you have to think about the building first and then energetically, and then eventually it comes together. But to apply that toward your health, through your meditation, where you settle the mind, and then, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I wanted to make sure that I got this. If the mind is settled, then what happens is you can open up more, and of course the body will heal itself. Am I correct?
Correct, definitely. I mean, we can see all the time in life how the mind affects the physical body. Sometimes you don't make the connection, but like if you become angry, the body becomes hot. Your face, some people's face becomes really red. You've seen some people's red face when they're angry. Or if you feel sad, or if you have like feel sad, then physical tears, water starts coming out of the eyes, right? Or people have sometimes maybe even felt in a breakup in a relationship. Then it totally throws the subtle body and the mind out of whack, and people can not feel hungry, and it completely affects us physically. Even like this. So the emotions affect the physical body. So by putting those into balance, then the physical body also comes into balance. So, yes, correct.
You know, right now I'm seeing so many people with cancer. I mean, different forms of cancer. And you know, we realize that this is an imbalance. And, you know, they're treating it here in the United States with, you know, chemicals and radiation and surgery. And we're not really being successful with it. I mean, it's sustaining life for a while, but it seems that if the person can change their mental, emotional attitude, then they would open up something new. And if they're not, the universe may recycle them.
My father had cancer. Yeah, I know what you're saying. My father has cancer. He has hairy cell leukemia. It's one of the cancers that doesn't have a tumor, and it's uh-huh. rare, but it's blood cancer. And he was scheduled to get chemotherapy like 3 or 4 years ago, and he was like, no, I'm mind over matter. He's in a black belt in Aikido and Jiu-Jitsu and stuff, right? So he's like, mind over matter. The subtle is more important than the physical. So I'm going to change my mindset and change some of my lifestyle, some of my habits, just eating organic and taking things like ashwagandha and just some like simple herbs, astragalus and stuff. And and they keep on postponing the chemo because he's fine. He's stable. There's like the cancer's not getting it and it getting to him. In his words, he's winning. right? And he's just like, it's all about my mindset and about not letting the cancer beat me. And if he had followed the normal course of medicine, he would have been dead by now. But he's still, the cancer hasn't progressed, and it's been like 4 years. And it's still the same way. The doctors say, come back in a year. They don't even want to look at him anymore because he's doing fine, you know? So,
well,
yeah.
Well, it's fortunate that he has that mindset. Most people, I know I spoke to a patient. She's actually a friend, you know, she isn't a patient, but she knows the type of medicine I do. And, you know, she does. She's really into, you know, doing things according to traditional stuff. And a few years ago, I was in Switzerland studying at the Paracelsus Institute, and they have a whole biological clinic. They're Western doctors, but they work homeopathically. They open up to vitamin C injections, or not injections, but IVs, and they look at the teeth to see if there's an imbalance there. So they're looking at the whole body, mind, and spirit, and I suggested that she goes there. I said, because this would be a whole shift in your life. And I told her it was a little pricey, and they have more than enough money. She looked at me, and she said, Dr. Wu, are you absolutely out of your mind? Why would I do that? So anyway, she was just in the hospital again for 6 weeks, and they had to take out her stomach because her stomach had cancer, and they connect the esophagus to the small intestines. So I realize that all of our health is a learning process. And she's going to learn now. She can't eat the same way that she did. She was eating a certain way. Now they took away her stomach, so she can't eat that way anymore. But it's a hard lesson to learn. If one can make the shift mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, like your father's doing, the chances of the disease progressing are very slim, or at least you have a much better chance.
Yeah, definitely.
In the West, we don't we poo-poo that type of work somewhat.
Yeah, I know. Also, but there's also things go the other way too. Like some people, they're like, I'm just spiritual, right? I just deal in meditation and stuff like that, and they neglect the physical. Right? And like you were saying, the treatments also, you have to have physical treatments. You need to get the right nutrition and vitamin D, IVs, and things like this. So also, like, one of the things, like, I get a lot of people who come to me, they're just like, they very much in the clouds, and they're missing, like, the grounded, tangible reality. And that's one of the reasons why I like to view things in the way that I just explained them through the elements, and it's explained better in the course, of course. And of course, that wasn't the pun intended. Anyway, so
I think our reason coming to this planet and taking human birth is to learn and grow, and you can't neglect anything. I have a program called the Magic Square. It's a Chinese program, and it covers a few different things. It covers your career. It covers dual cultivation. It covers your family, your finances, your spiritual work, your travel and influential people, your project, your legacy, your self-cultivation, and your success. And if you leave one of them out, you're not balanced. It's everything. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. I completely agree. The Vedic approach is like that. There's certain scriptures that explain about architecture and building buildings, like the Taj Mahal was built according to that. There's certain scriptures, Ayurveda, it's about health and wellness. I think you're probably familiar with that. And some people even say that acupuncture originated in Ayurveda. There's one book, Lost Secrets of Ayurvedic Acupuncture, talks about that. But I'm not an expert in that field, so I don't know. But then also, martial arts.
And brought from India to the Shaolin Temple.
Yeah.
Right. So many of the things have started in India. I'd like to ask a question. You know, you touched on the battle with Arjuna, you know, speaking, you didn't talk about speaking to Krishna, but, you know, the battle and being on the battlegrounds. And I know that, I read that, you know, I'm not a scholar, but I've read the book before. And in that book, that battle is between our lower nature and our higher nature. Is that where the battle takes place? Where, who is he battling? I know he's not battling Krishna. He's battling his own inner nature. Is that where that is?
Okay. So we're talking about the Bhagavad Gita again.
And
so some people, and I think this is probably what you heard, they like to put metaphors into the Bhagavad Gita. So he was there, the battle actually never happened, and there's, it's a metaphor of someone battling their knower nature and different examples like this. But I've studied it my whole life. I remember my father taught me the first verse of the Bhagavad Gita when I was 4 years old. I remember. So the Bhagavad Gita is actually one part of a very long book, a very big book. It's called the Mahabharata. It's like a soap opera, stories of these kings, and it's a huge, huge story, right? And the Bhagavad Gita is one part of that bigger text, that bigger drama, so to say. And so there's a lot of knowledge and building up to why they're there on the battlefield. But it's actually, you can go to the place Kurukshetra where the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, where the battle actually took place, and it was actually a battle. There was a battle, and the reason why he was perturbed was because he was on one side with his brothers, and on his other side was his cousins, was his family, was his friends, was his gurus, his teachers. And in Vedic culture, your teacher, your guru, it's as good as God, right? So he was saying, how can this be right? How can I be needing to fight this battle if I'm going to kill my family, if I'm going to kill my friends, if I'm going to kill my gurus? It's like, just to become king, I don't even want worldly things. Why do I want to do this? And that's the discussion. And I know it's a very like heavy subject matter, but it how do you say, inspires so much deep wisdom. The concept of dharma, of what is our inherent constitutional nature, what is the right thing to do, what is our morality, what is our duty, what is that gets how do you say, in a lot of depth in the Bhagavad Gita. You get into the very nature of that, or karma, like these words are now familiar here in the West. It's nice to see, right, the law of action and reaction, right? So it's like, okay, if you're going to kill someone, then the law of karma says, and you will also be killed. If you inflict pain on someone else, then pain shall come to you. This is just the natural law of karma. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction, you know? So that gets also put, how do you say, described deeply in the book. Then it's also, there's karma yoga, which is interesting, right? Karma yoga, people are familiar with. People think that it's like exercise and stuff like that here, but yeah, I'm actually just writing a book proposal right now, and we talk about yoga anyway. So yoga means to link, or it means to unite. It means to connect, right? Connect two beings together. That's what yoga is. So karma yoga is the process of action in connecting us with the divine, connecting us with the supreme, or what some would say would be God, right? So the Bhagavad Gita talks a lot about this. How can our everyday life, how can us going to work, how can us taking care of our family and our friends and our kids, how can us just be living in the world instead of it being a cause of bondage? Because if it's just karma, right, then it binds us. If it's just action, because every action creates a reaction. So there's the reactions come and hold us into this world. It's a larger concept. I also have a course on this, by the way, Bhagavad Gita course that's coming out soon. But then karma yoga is the process of how can we have our actions be spiritualized and lead us to enlightenment. So in the Bhagavad Gita, you ask about the battle. It's Arjuna. I know I'm kind of jumping to the chase, because if you don't understand the whole thing, it might still sound a little bit out of place. But his duty was to be a warrior. That was his dharma, or that was his function. That was his nature. And it would not have been right for him to neglect his duty and to neglect his very being, right? And the Bhagavad Gita is a whole conversation about that. So it's actually a battle that took place.
I don't know if that clears it up for everybody, you know, but that's a good start. And it would be interesting to hear some more lectures that you do about that, because in the West, you know, my understanding is it was a metaphor, you know, and like you said, I didn't know there was actually a physical battle on the earth.
Yeah,
I thought
that
was all a metaphor.
Yes, and see, a lot of like with the spiritual community, so to say, or a lot of times the intention is to try to keep things happy and light, and that's beautiful because that's kind of we want anandamaya abhyasat, as described in the Vedic scriptures. The soul is naturally seeking happiness and joy, and that's our constitutional nature, is to taste the happiness and that bliss and joy. And a lot of times this world is, it's a dark place. A lot of times we suffer. A lot of times it's not so nice. So sometimes when we come into a spiritual path, we kind of want to run away from the world. We want to run away from the reality of existence and kind of go into this other dimension and this other realm of consciousness, of happiness and bliss. And there is a place for that. There is, if one follows the spiritual path properly, then suffering is negated and one does taste pure transcendental ecstatic bliss. But still, reality is not, how do you say, neglected, right? The fact is, every second right now, there's hundreds of people, like I kicked my finger, so many people have been killed, so many people have been raped, so many people have been murdered. There's how many animals have had their throats being slit right now. There's so much suffering in every ounce of existence. Even when I'm clicking my finger like that, I don't know if you can hear it through my phone, but when I'm clicking my finger, just the act of me moving like that is crushing some small microbes and bacteria, just destroying them and tearing them apart alive. So that's also part of reality. That's also there. So real spiritual life is not just running away from something, but it's a connecting with the truth and dealing with the things the way they are, you know? And then, of course, enlightening ourselves and expanding beyond that. So I find it really interesting, and it kind of left a really big impression in my heart how Bhagavad Gita, one of the, for example, Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, he's so famous, and he's famous for being nonviolent. That's the very premise of his existence. He's like nonviolence. He's like synonymous to nonviolence. Everybody knows that, right? Mahatma Gandhi.
Sorry.
But his main book, the main stuff that he studied and where he got his philosophies and when he got his ideas from, is the Bhagavad Gita. Is that text that happened on a battlefield. So it's kind of like, How do I say this in a different language? What I mean to say is that if a philosophy is real, it's not just intellectual or psychological gymnastics. It's something to be practiced. It's something to be experienced. It's something that works in tangible life. And even in very, very difficult situations, that way of being, that enlightened state, will empower us for everything to be perfect. And so when this knowledge is being taught by Krishna to Arjuna on the battlefield, it's like I could not think of a more high-stake situation to get it right, you know? It's like that's the most risky situation. Shall I kill my family or not? And so anyway, I don't know if that's making sense, but it makes
no,
sense.
That does make sense. I want to tell you a little story that happened to me some years ago. I asked my teacher if he would open my heart chakra, and it sort of blew me off. And well, then a week or so later, I asked him would he open my heart chakra, and he sort of blew me off again, and. He said, you don't really need that right now. Of course, I'm pretty relentless in my asking. And one of his kids got sick, his youngest daughter, who was about 6 months old, and he had to take her to the hospital. And he asked me if I would watch the older daughter, who was 3 or 4 years old. And I said, oh, of course, I'll be glad to watch her. Kids are, you know, I took her for a walk and took her for an ice cream and, you know, whatever you do with kids. And they were gone for about 6 or 7 hours at the hospital. And when he came back, he said, "Oh, I'm so grateful. Thank you so much. I don't know what we would have done. We were really in a jam. If there's anything I can do for you," I said, "Oh, yes."
Get open my heart chakra,
right?
Yeah.
So yeah. He agreed, you know. He agreed, you know, he sort of laughed and said, "Okay." So the next morning we went into the meditation hall and we sat for a while and he worked with me and opened my heart and I saw the beautiful flowers and the beautiful colors and the, oh, everything that I thought about of opening my heart. And then I saw all the starving children and all the death and all the destruction and all that. And I cried for 2 weeks. I was just sobbed, deep, deep sob. I had no idea what I was asking for. And and as you explained that story, I said, "Oh, yeah, I remember that part." You know, a lot of things we just don't open up to. We're not aware of, you know. Like you said, you snap your fingers and something died, but it, you know, that's not part of our consciousness or people eating animals or all the killing that's going on right now on the planet and the starving people. It's very, very painful. And like I said, it wasn't like I cried a little tear. I sobbed deep, deep sobbing for a couple of weeks until I, you know, sort of got back. It really changed my understanding of being on this planet and living here. And I think it's part of made me a healer, you know, more of a healer or wanting to heal more. And, you know, you bring that up, you know, I mean, like I thought I'd ask a simple question about, and was he working on his internal structure? And then as we look at it, you know, we keep seeing the bigger picture. And a lot of times people don't want to look at that. They try to close down. Like you said, our natural state is happiness and we want it all good and roses and whatever, but that we don't realize that we forget that there's a thorn.
Yes. But thorn, the happiness is not artificial. It's a real happiness. Mm-hmm. You know, like a lot of time, like we're saying, people go into the spiritual stuff to kind of like psych themselves into being happy, you know, but that like we understand that this, that we're spiritual beings, which means that we're a spirit soul. We're made, like I was explaining the different elements before, there's the eight elements, right? Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. But we're not any of those. We're beyond that. We're made of pure desire. We're made of pure knowledge and pure bliss. But because we've been covered by the material energy, we've been covered by these elements. We have a subtle body, and we have a physical body. And what happens is we identify with this subtle body, and we identify with this physical body. And because of that, suffering is a natural side effect. Because, like, there's one nice verse in the Vedic scriptures I like. It says, "Bhayam dutyam abhinivesitasya." That's the original Sanskrit, which means that we experience fear. We experience pain and suffering because we have an avinivesh, which means an absorption in something which is secondary or something which is unreal, something which is untrue. And by being absorbed in that non-reality or in that imperfect existence, then a natural side effect is our suffering. It's a natural side effect is our pain. So the point being is that we are a spirit soul, we're a living entity which is beyond the physical body. It's even beyond the energetic body. It's beyond the mind. It's beyond the intelligence, you know, and it's beyond our ego, our material conditioning. But we're identifying with these things, so we've lost the understanding of who we are. We've lost our true identity, our nature. But if we look, also in the Vedic scriptures, it's in very much detail explains what is the nature of the soul. And then the inherent nature of the soul is that there's this bliss, there's this joy, there's this happiness, which is way beyond any kind of happiness which exists in this material realm. it's a different dimension of happiness. Like in this world, we can enjoy certain things. We can have certain pleasures. We can go to Six Flags, or we can go to whatever makes us happy in this world, right? There's different things that can gratify our senses, our tongue, our taste, our smell, our touch. There's these things that can gratify us, but that has nothing on the happiness or the joy that exists in just being you. In just the nature of the soul or being yourself, right? And here's the beautiful part, because like a lot of spiritual philosophies, they're geared at having you realize yourself. In other words, cure yourself from the conditioning of the elements of this world and the bondage of this world, and just realize the joy and the beauty in yourself. But the Bhakti philosophy or the Vedic philosophy that I teach says that even beyond that, there's a higher type of love. There's a higher type of beauty, and that is the love of relationship. But not just any relationship, but spiritual, divine, transcendental relationship. A relationship with what some would say God, or some would say the supreme divine being. When you have that relationship, then Ananda Ashesha is described in some of the scriptures, then happiness and joy is completely limitless and full of, how do you say, it's just awesome for a common day cliche. It's the best thing ever in existence. Even, I know I'm going off on a bit of a roll here, but I get excited when I speak about these things because it's so beautiful that there's one, form of the Supreme that we understand according to the Vedic culture, that God himself is looking and saying, wow, there's so much happiness in that divine loving relationship. I want to taste that. I want to understand that. And God is even baffled by the glory, the sweetness, and the joy that exists inside of that transcendental love, even though he's the object of that love, right? God is still trying to understand the sweetness that exists inside of it. So the process of yoga, the process of bhakti yoga, which we teach, is about how to taste and how to live in that transcendental love, how to go there. And that's so different. That's so not even comparative to trying to be spiritual and sitting and going home and psyching yourself into some kind of a spiritual experience. It's more real and more tangible than any material experience that we can have in this world, in this realm. So I forget exactly why we were saying that, but basically we're talking about Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, right? The dilemma that Arjuna had. So what they're teaching us is how to connect with that real love, that reality, and then that way we can help other people.
Wow.
I mean, there's so much, too. I'm trying to say, what should I say? What should I not say? You know, I said a bit more than I was expecting to on this show.
Well, I'm so glad you did, because, you know, sometimes the truth just flows out and we don't have a choice. I have we don't have that much time. So I was wondering if you would tell people a little bit about your course and how to get in touch with you.
Okay. So I created actually two courses. One is the Bhagavad Gita course, which is the book that we've been talking about now, that dilemma that happened in the battlefield. And another course is, I'm calling it Elemental Reality Course. And that explains the structure of existence, the very nature of all of reality, and how things work, how the subtle creates the physical, how the physical affects the subtle, how the subtle is more powerful than the physical, how we can attune ourselves to these different dimensions of reality, how we can use that to be effective in our business, how we can use that to be effective in our life and our relationships and our health and everything. It actually took me 8 years to create that course. I was giving a class in a yoga studio, and they told me to speak about the power of mantra. That's what was advertised. And I was like, okay, well, if I have to explain why mantras work, we have to understand all of reality. And then I started creating that course in 8 years, just refining it. And so because this is the first time I'm talking about that course in public, my first time, my friends know that I did it. I filmed it recently. It's in post-production right now. The videos are being edited and stuff like that, so it's like nice bite size and stuff. So I will give that course to anybody who emails me. You can have that course for 30 days. It's actually a college-accredited course, so you get college credits from it, Florida Vedic College. But I'll give you 30 days access to that course, so you'll have time to go through it all and everything. If you just email me at my email info@vishnu-swami.com. That's info, I-N-F-O, at Vishnu, that's V-I-S-H-N-U, V-I-S-H-N-U, I'll say it again, V-I-S-H-N-U, dash, or hyphen, Swami, S-W-A-M-I, S-W-A-M-I, .com. So info at Vishnu, V-I-S-H-N-U, dash, Swami, S-W-A-M-I, .com. And you send me an email, mention this radio show, say I heard you on the radio, and I will give you that 30-day access to that course when it comes out. Right now, the website's under construction, so it might be a month or two before that's available. But then I'll email you and give you access to that course because I think it will help you and help lots of people. And that's my gift of gratitude for being on this show. So,
wow. Well, thank you. That's a very big gift. Wow, that is incredible.
So yeah, I know. It's 8 years of work.
Yeah, for sure. And are you teaching classes in the Miami area?
I do say sometimes I do. I'm connected with some yoga teachers here, and part of their yoga teacher training, also if someone's interested in becoming certified as a yoga teacher, you'll get about 25 hours of class with me. We'll go through the Bhagavad Gita, we'll go through elemental reality and a few other things. And plus, you'll learn how to do the postures, the asanas, and be a certified yoga teacher with Yoga Alliance. You can also, happening, it's a two-week intensive program. There's me, there's also some other teachers that are part of it. And that's happening on, I think, May, the first 2 weeks of May or something. The dates are still being finalized. So you can email me about that, and I'll be teaching part of that course. Also, sometimes some yoga studios, in Trio Yoga Studio, there's a thing this Friday, just like a kirtan meditation thing if you want to come. You can email me more about that. But the main thing, what I'm doing here is creating the online program so that we can help people in lots of areas, not just in Miami.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Well, that is good news for all of us because sometimes we live in a spiritual vacuum. And, you know, people, they talk that they're spiritual, they want to be spiritual, but they have no idea where to go and how to start. So the teachings that you're giving to people and sharing, it's so helpful because it it allows people to actually open up and understand what they're doing instead of, you know, like you said, saying om and going home. So it's really appreciated. It's a big help. And it's not often that we get someone as knowledgeable as you here in the Miami area. I mean, it's a blessing, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart. That's why I was so happy to have you come on the show and visit with us on Energy Medicine. You know, it's like I said, it's a great blessing for all of us. So,
yeah, thank you. It's been really fun for me to come on, too. This is, you know, it's special for me, actually, because it's the first time that I'm announcing this course in public. So so thank you. I'm happy in that. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And I'll probably get the email again for just to make sure in case anyone misses it. But, yeah.
All right. Yeah, let's say the email again so everybody gets it.
Okay. So email me. I'll answer you personally. Don't worry. And it's info, I-N-F-O, at Vishnu-Swami.com. Info at Vishnu-Swami.com. So that Vishnu is spelled V-I-S-H-N-U. And then dash hyphen Swami, S-W-A-M-I, S-W-A-M-I.com. And the website will be up soon. It's under construction right now. If you see it right now, it'll be all messy. But it'll be... I'll email you when it's ready. So, yeah, and you'll get that beautiful course as well.
Okay,
and also then you'll
be
able to see about the Bhagavad Gita course and other events that we do and other programs, which is good.
Good. Swami, I'd like to ask you, we have about 5 minutes left and then or 4 minutes left and then the intro, you know, our outro is going to come up.
Okay.
What I'd like to do is... just open up the energy in all of our listening audience, and of course, I'm asking the Swami if he would do the same, because like the meditations and everything, they're all vibrational, and the healing takes place on an energetic level, sometimes it's nice to be touched, but sometimes you send energy to someone who's across on the other side of the world. So let's just take a moment and sort of bring that energy in and allow that healing energy to radiate out from all of us and give us a spiritual healing. So if you want to say a mantra or something, that would be very helpful.
Okay. Sometimes we're more connected than we're aware of, actually, you know. And anyway, I can talk about that for a while, but we're not. You want something practical. So I guess if everyone just breathes in and breathes out, relaxing, and just kind of feeling present in your body and bringing your mind to focus your energy to understand that in the world there's so much beauty and sweetness. And the origin of that beauty or the origin of that sweetness exists in the divine or in God or in the supreme being. And by connecting with that supreme being, we can, taste that love and taste that relationship and do that. So there's many mantras and we can explain them, but we're not going to do that now. So I'll just chat a few mantras from the Vedas and just let them soak in and remember, kind of focus on beauty and sweetness. That's what one of our gurus said, that if I don't know God, if I don't know anything, just focus your mind on anything that's beautiful, and then naturally you'll come to that supreme, because that's the origin or the source. So, Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavridvisavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Many blessings.
I look forward in connecting with everybody and continuing our journey.
Thank you, Swami. We're going to sign off now. Thanks for being with us.
Join Dr. Wu Di every first and third Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Or listen again online at bbsradio.com/energymedicineradio. Wishing you the best in your health, wealth, and happiness.